Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side.
Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win. Like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win. Like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only. Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
"I found nirvana! I win!"
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $365 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only. Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win. Like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Childhood labels such as the sensitive one or the difficult one have remained consistent generation after generation. Today, we have honest conversation about these labels and how we see them play out in both our personal and professional lives.
You're listening to Honest Women, the podcast for every woman who's trying to juggle the relationships, roles, and responsibilities that come with modern womanhood, finding it all just a little harder than she thought it would be. We're your hosts, Andrea Berkeley
and Jessica Hutchison, your new besties who just happen to be therapists. And while we believe that life is hard and there's no tip or trick that will solve that, it does get just a little bit easier when we can be real with each other and talk about it honestly.
You're listening to Honest Women.
Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. Has it been a good morning?
No. It has not been a good morning at all. How about you?
It was a little rough. It was a little rough. I was definitely reflecting on what we're about to talk about today. And yeah, it was playing out in my house this morning for sure.
Oh, girl. Yep. Mm-hmm. Me too. And it, you know what? It actually started really nicely. And then my family woke up and all hell. And everything went to shit in a handbag. Oh, good Lord. I tell you what, today's episode, I've actually been really excited to do, and you don't even know my excitement because I haven't told you my excitement. I'll start with kind of telling a story of how this topic came up because it was truly this big aha moment for me. I get home from picking up my daughter and she got into an altercation. I don't know, you know, one of those 10-year-old girl drama, mm-hmm. fights, whatever. Love her mom. She's very similar to me. So we're kind of texting like, okay, what story did you get? Here's a story I got. Let's piece it mm-hmm. together and figure out what actually happened, right? And yeah. so long story short, my daughter she's just not the tattler where it's like, just say, it's okay to say somebody did something or whatnot. She's like, why? I can deal with it. I can handle it. Problem is she's often on the receiving end of tattling. Being on the receiving end of tattling means she's often the bad guy. So she gets ridiculed or disciplined without the opportunity to give her perspective. And I myself, as her mother and knowing her, have said, what did you do? Guilty mm-hmm. as charged. So as I'm kind of talking through with this mom, she mentions and throws out the label sensitive. I say back, my daughter tends to not be aware of other people's sensitivity. So after I talked to this mom, I went and sat with my daughter. And this was where I kind of had this aha moment. I looked at her and told her, it must be really hard to be in a position where you upset somebody and you actually don't know why they're upset, do you? And she looks at me and she's like, no, I don't get it. And then I'm take it a step further. I'm like, and then when you try to ask questions to figure out what is upsetting about it, it upsets them even more. Mm-hmm. She's like, yes, I don't get it. And then they go and tattle on me and then I get in trouble and I'm the bad guy and I honestly don't understand what I did. And I'm looking at her, I'm like, wow, I have such a different understanding of you. And then in my head, I'm thinking, and your dad, truly, on how hard it must be to upset somebody who can be labeled the sensitive one and really, truly not get it. And then get in trouble or ridiculed for being quote unquote mean, and you have no idea what you did wrong. I mean, Andrea, I kid you not, I was sitting in my bed that night and it was like I saw this whole different, the world so much differently.
Yeah.
And then as I do, I dive down in my head, which can be a scary thing, about childhood labels and how they play out into adulthood. And that mm-hmm. is why I have been dying to talk this through with you. One, because you're like the best sounding board, right? But you offer, yeah, you're welcome. You offer perspective. We talk through things and yeah. it just starts to make sense. You know, then I started to think about labels like the difficult one, mm-hmm. the angry one, and how that plays out. Yeah. So uh-huh. I'm curious, what was your label as a child?
Gosh, I've had time to think about this. I haven't thought about it. I feel like I haven't gotten to the right end. Like I'm not 100% sure, but the label I have internalized is like the high achieving one.
Ooh.
Or the responsible one. And then when I was in high school, more like the dramatic one, but definitely the high achieving one, kind of independent. She runs herself one. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. That was not me.
Oh,
that was my sister.
I was the good one. I was the one you don't have to worry about. I was the one who can get things done independently. I'm the one who's going to get the A+. And some of that has to do with school. You know, mm-hmm. some of that has to do with how I took to learning and my personality. Here's an embarrassing story. When I was in middle school, we had to make up an invention. And my invention was a little box that had a little, like a cutout of a hand with like a stick attached to it. And you could pull a string and then it would raise the hand for when your arm was tired from raising your hand in class.
Why is that embarrassing? That's awesome.
No, it because I think it goes without saying, like I was super popular in middle school.
Well, and I'm also thinking, that's how many times did you raise your hand, right?
All
you
the time,
were the hand raiser.
Every time. Yeah. I mean, I was like, I always know the answer and I want to share my opinion and I want to be good. You're asking a question. I'm going to answer the question, even if it means that comes with total lack of social awareness. So I think a big part of my growing up years was not so much people pleasing, but adult pleasing. I'm the responsible one. I'm the one who was babysitting at 10. People would say, I can't believe how responsible she is. And that's definitely my label. Responsible, high achieving, the one you don't have to worry about.
Ooh, okay. How has that impacted you in adulthood then?
Many ways. So this is one of the things that I like the most about me. It's also one of the, like, and I can claim that I'm pretty high achieving. It's also one of the things that plagues my existence because I've definitely internalized this sense that I need to do something great. And so if I'm struggling, it's with this sense a lot of times that I'm not doing something great. It also has made me really hang my hat on achieving. And I've had some very hilarious conversations in my own personal therapy. One just this last week where we were talking about the fact that I might never be satisfied. Some of the goals that I have right now are once I meet them, like, aren't I just going to have another goal? And I'm like, yes, of course I will. But I think those will feel good. I was very resistant to being challenged on that. It feels part of my identity. I can't really separate those things out. I don't know who I am if I'm not achieving. So this kicked my ass going into motherhood because motherhood is the anti-achievement. Feels like there's some award to be won. That's how I feel in my whole life. But I won zero awards as a mom. And so instead of just feeling normal or having some grace for myself, I think it left me feeling really bad. There's not a lot of middle ground. Either you've got the A and then you're working for the next thing, or you're the worst, like worthless, without identity. Yeah, I'm easygoing. That's
goes without saying, obviously. Okay, now I have a follow-up question.
Uh-oh.
I know. It's not a big one. Don't worry. How much of that, you know, I do think obviously a big chunk is just personality. How much do you think is a result of a childhood label and conditioning?
Okay, so here's the thing. I don't think these labels come out of nowhere. And I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to talk a little bit later in the episode about how this plays out in our own families, because I'm aware of how this is happening in my own family. My children, we kind of have a sense of this one's the this one, this one's the that one. And it's because it's true. There were things that led us to the point of saying, oh, you're the difficult one. You're the creative one. You're the sweet one. There were things that led us to that, but you can become so bound by it. I think the label was right on. But I also think, for example, like I was a super parentified child. I was a super adultified child. So maybe I came into the world with a sense of being highly competent or smart or driven. Like maybe that I was born with that. I don't know. But there were also things in my environment that led me to be more that way that weren't necessarily healthy.
Right.
And then that label really... it really reinforces. It becomes a thing that's more true because other people say it about you. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes. No, it makes perfect sense. This is why I wanted to talk through this, is because, yes, I agree with you. I think a lot of it is a result of it's just true. Let me talk about my labels. It's interesting because lo and behold, I was not the responsible one at all. I was the happy child. I was the easy child. Now, if you ask me to look at my childhood, I think that label was very accurate in early childhood. Mm-hmm. I was pretty easy and I was pretty happy. I think for me, where it got me into trouble was adolescent, because the thing about being the happy child is it really programs you to think that that's your baseline, that you are always supposed to feel joy and be really positive. So the minute, this is why I got into trouble in adolescence or the teenage years, I mean, internally in trouble, well, externally too, but that's another podcast episode. Internally, when I started to feel these other feelings and emotions that weren't quote unquote in that happy, joyful category, mm-hmm. I turned inward from a standpoint of what's wrong with me. Really made me in tune with so many things from Nancy Grace, right? Wasn't that her name? Nancy Grace, the old books, the detective books, Nancy Grace?
Oh, Nancy Drew. No, Nancy Drew. Grace is like a talking head, like investigative journalist, I think.
Okay. See, well, Nancy's like to investigate, whether it's Drew or Grace. They like to investigate. See, not the overachiever over here. So then I started to become really in tune with things around me to try mm-hmm. to figure out what it was that was not making me happy because I'm the happy one. It really did not start to get me into trouble until the teenage years, but it's also reinforced by society. So mm-hmm. anybody who is been labeled the life of the party or the really fun one, there's so much pressure because when you're the happy life of the party, go lucky, the minute you walk into the room and you're not that, everybody notices. Mm-hmm. And then it's further reinforced as what's wrong? What's going on? What's wrong? You're not you. You're not being normal. What's going on? It's like kind of beaten into your head that you're not good unless you're happy or easygoing or this isn't your role. You're supposed right. to be happy. You're supposed to crack the joke.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is that these labels shape our relationship with the world around us. So I can see in our own family that the labels, if we're not careful, and we try to be pretty mindful around this because we've seen what it does, those labels can shape how other people treat us, like what they expect of us and the way that they interact with us. And they can also just shape how we identify ourselves in relationship to the world.
Big time.
And what's allowed.
And what feels comfortable. So even as we're talking through this, I'm thinking about a couple weeks ago when we released the episode during Suicide Prevention Week. It was a very vulnerable and honest episode. Loved doing that, truly do. But what's funny is the amount of people who reached out or sent us messages, whether it was personally or through the podcast, which I appreciate. Let me be clear. I appreciate those so much. Mm-hmm. But my inner being struggles so much with that attention.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have to be honest here. I have yeah. to, right? That's what we're doing. I have to be honest. I struggled with the attention because, I mean, decades, I only received attention for happiness. Mm. So now to shift over and receive attention for vulnerability or sadness or pain, I kind of didn't realize it until we started talking through it right now. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, thanks. Let's move on. Ha ha. Let me crack a joke. I did force myself with some to bond and just stay in it. But truly at 40 years old, that label still comes out and mm-hmm. feels uncomfortable.
Yeah. To be fair, that was a really hard thing to do. Even for somebody who wades around in the difficult things, I think sharing your most vulnerable and tender, and especially a story that has a sense of stigma around it, that was really a big deal. So to be fair, but I do hear you saying that because you are the happy one, and probably still to this day, the one that Jessica's here, like, you know, we're going to laugh, that it can be really, really weird to be like, oof. And it sounds like people responded to you really well, maybe with some surprise, but there might also be a time where people respond to you and they're like, we don't know what to do. Because you live in this little box that's like Jessica, the happy one. And then we're like, when will you be happy again? Or I don't know how to comfort you because you're not the one who usually needs comforting.
Yes. And that is something I wish my 16-year-old self would have known. Then if you look at wanting or needing, which kind of goes to this next level of this conversation or next part of this conversation, is how we seek comfort, right? Or what we need, and how those past labels then play out as parents, as partners, as friends. So if I look at Jessica, the happy one, and great point of saying people might not know how to support you if you're usually presenting yourself in this one way,
right?
Thinking about how that leads to loneliness for people mm-hmm. or feeling like nobody cares. And often that's not the case.
Right.
It's right. If you're only showing up this one way, people don't know how to lean in or support you or nurture you or care in the way that you need, nor do you often know.
Yeah. Or even in ways that would be different than what you usually get. So
this seems like a great time to take a break. We'll be right back.
I've shared this story on the podcast before, but I'm going to say it again. I know I bring a lot of big sister energy to the table. Like, I am a big sister. I am the epitome of big sister. I am first. I'm not actually the firstborn. High achieving, independent. I have an opinion. You should know what it is. I will take care of you whether you like it or not. Big sister energy. That for me was something that was really reinforced by my childhood label of responsible or whatever it was, because those traits are considered good traits. So I was getting positive attention for the label that I received in childhood, which means that all of my natural tendencies and all of the social feedback that I got said, yes, keep doing that. The problem is that that means that I didn't really learn how to be very vulnerable. I didn't really learn how to let other people show up for me. It wasn't natural. And so this isn't about better or worse. It's about what's natural to you. And that needing from other people was not natural. Receiving from other people was not natural. And so I am telling you the truth when I say that the first time that I really felt vulnerable and able to receive, those times were in my 30s. And I know that like there are people who know me who listen to this and are like, what bullshit? Like, you were vulnerable before. Sure. And not in a receiving way, not in a healthy way. And so it took getting to some of the lowest of the low points of my life before I didn't show up the way that I was labeled. I couldn't show up as the responsible, self-sufficient, big sister part. And I was lucky enough to have some of my nearest and dearest friends who had known me in that role forever show up for me as big sisters. And I actually had one of those friends say to me, I love that I get to be this for you. I've never gotten to be this for you before. You've always been this for me. And, you know, again, like it or not, because big sister energy is not actually always the best. But that's how I was showing up in her life for a long time. And challenging that pattern of behavior and that label was so necessary, but it made the whole thing hard. Like, it took a long time for me to get there. Things had to be really, really tough or bad. And it felt so uncomfortable. It was so uncomfortable. Yet it was exactly what I needed, not just then, but I think throughout my life, to be seen and not have to be good to be seen as good.
That is one thing we share, even though we have very different labels, or we had different labels in childhood, is it took profound pain, because I would agree with you, it would be my 30s after my dad died, actually took being knocked down so hard you really couldn't stand up by yourself in order to learn how to be truly vulnerable, because it was easier. And then in the back of my mind, that's what I was supposed to do, to just be the happy one, right? And so I'm listening to you talk and thinking, wow, we share that commonality in I'm only good if I'm achieving the big sister energy. I'm like, oh, you are. I haven't even realized that. In this partnership of ours, which we've been working hand in hand for a while now, you totally are. And it's funny you said
now
that.
Now we have a new way to, like,
I do go into
express our displeasure
mode
with one another. You'd be like, you're really being a big sister right now. I'll be like, well, you're being a little sister right now.
Stop big sistering me.
Right.
You're, we're the same
older,
age.
So
stop being my
fits,
big sister.
It's fine. What I think you're saying is
you
that
are,
sometimes our labels keep
fit
us from
fits, right?
Real vulnerability and connection, because it's like a shorthand for defining us. And it also, I think, limits the way that other people interact with us. For example, in my family, if I have a child that was labeled as the whiny one or the tattling one or the too sensitive one, right? Because sensitive could be seen as a positive and it could be seen as a negative. A lot of this has to do with our socialization and gender expectations, and all, there's just a lot that goes into it. But that child may not get a fair shake from us with a really reasonable grievance. That child may not get our emotional attunement because we're discounting. Or the child that's seen as the nice one, the sweet one, oh, you've always been so sweet and kind and generous and thoughtful. When that child is mean to one of the other siblings, which happened this morning, which is why our morning wasn't great. I want to go ham on that child. I am like, what is wrong with you right now? Because this isn't who you are. I mean, to be fair, I expect all my kids to be kind to one another, but does that label impact the way that I interact with this child? I think it probably does.
I've become very aware of that. I have internal in my head labels for my children, or I feel like I do as a parent, challenge my quote unquote more difficult one more than I challenge my quote unquote easier, softer, sensitive one, and expect different things. You weren't the difficult, quote unquote, difficult child. I wasn't quote unquote the difficult child. I can see how shame can live inside a child that's labeled difficult. And my mind has gone all over the place with that, what that label turns into in adulthood. I really have a lot of empathy now for this label and how hard it must be, because I am sensitive. I was the more sensitive one. That was another label I had, is being sensitive. And I will say, growing up as the quote unquote sensitive child, ooh, it's easy to figure out whether you're trying to or not how to manipulate a situation. It is really easy, because the minute you cry, oh, it makes somebody feel bad for you. You get what you want. And that kind of sucks for, I actually feel a little bad for my husband. I can shut down a conversation very easily through tears, or you're so mean. And then if it doesn't get shut down, then even going further, like, why aren't you bending here? Like, the world is always bent to the sensitive child, because how could you
Unless you grew up in a family where that was culturally unacceptable. So like I said, I don't think that my sensitive child is getting a fair shake in our family. Because we're like, we don't have time for that. Or, hey, you always have a grievance. And like, no, no thanks. You know, it's – yeah, so it doesn't – I think that same sensitive child could learn that, like, actually this is a part of me, which, to be fair, sensitivity is a beautiful thing. It's just like all of these. Strong-headedness is a beautiful thing. These are just traits that have good sides and they have challenging pieces. But that sensitivity could be the most beautiful thing about this child. The empathy, the soft heart, the relational aspect, and – it doesn't necessarily get brownie points in every situation. That child might learn, actually, the way that I feel things is not okay, and it doesn't work. Well, I think there is a happy middle. And I think there's maybe like a that's where we're trying to get. There's a reason we have childhood labels. They probably are a shorthand of describing some things that are true. And then these labels can't be the only thing or the most defining thing about us, because that works to our detriment. To all of our detriment. I've got one more little tag about the difficult child, because I think that this is an important thing to put out there.
Tell me
more. I know it's important in our family. So some of these labels, they start from the time that our children are born. And I wonder a little bit if my sense of being too much comes from the fact that I was a colicky baby. You know, whether you believe that our sense of self is shaped before we have memory, I do. I think that being a difficult baby impacts the way that people are able to interact with you, right? It impacts your parents' experience of you from before you were, I mean, you were an infant and helpless. So I had my own colicky child, and this child, this baby, was difficult. This toddler was difficult. This child's probably highly sensitive, right? There's a lot going on about how I would explain this personality now. But I noticed in our own family that when we would tell stories, you just never stopped crying. It was so hard. We didn't know what to do with you. Those are things that can really impact someone's sense of self. And we noticed it can't be the birth story and the baby story of one child. Oh, you were so lovely. We just loved you. We held you and we snuggled you. And then of another child, like, you were a demon spawn from hell. And that's how we're going to talk about you. it really limits that child and it limits their ability to feel worthy. It comes with a whole bunch of shame. And it's something we've been super conscientious about over the last couple of years. Because to be fair, my child, who was a really difficult baby, is a kick-ass middle grader. Just one of my favorite humans in the whole world. Someone I want to spend time with, who I just think is the best. But if I held that label, or if I continued to repeat these stories that come with a heavy label, this child would struggle and our relationship would struggle because this child would feel really rejected by us. And to be fair, if we kept repeating it, it would probably be a little bit true.
It's so true when you bring up that infant, because as you are sharing your story, I'm thinking about the stories of my children as babies, and they're very different. To no big surprise, the more quote unquote difficult one was definitely a difficult baby, challenged me more than the other one. And it's really just important to be aware of it, how they shape us or impact us. To the women listening, we hope that today's honest conversation exploring our own labels and how we've personally used those gives you the chance to get curious about your own labels that you've been using or ones that you yourself have been labeled. Maybe we can use that to gain a deeper or better understanding of friends, family, our children, or heck, even ourselves.
You've just finished an episode of the Honest Women Podcast. We are so honored that you would spend this time with us. We have so much more where this came from and don't want you to miss a minute. So please, right now, take a second to follow the show. While you're there, leave us a 5-star rating and a review. It's the best way to help other women find our show so they can join the conversation. And if you have a friend who could use a little more honesty in her life, and who couldn't, send this episode directly to her. Actually, send this episode to anyone you want to. Everyone's welcome here. We'll be back next Wednesday speaking some truth and feeling some feels. Until then, hang in there, ladies. This has been Honest Women.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win. Like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards. Save.